Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
It has indeed been a rocky few years in British politics, and one woman who has been in the thick of it in her own very special way is my very first guest, Carol Vorderman. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Dublin. Nice to talk to you. How is it? How's your weather Dublin?
Yeah, a little bit overcast, a little bit damp, but it held off, I think, for most of the Halloween celebrations. Tell me, it's an interesting morning in British politics. We're going to hear very, very shortly who's going to replace Rishi Sunak as leader. But look...
And both of them, or either of them, are appalling.
As you have outlined in your new book, the reason why we're talking to you, obviously people know you as a TV presenter. You were famously on Channel 4's Countdown for many years, which earned you a legion of fans in Ireland for that alone. But in the last couple of years, you've been on something of a political adventure of your own, making your opinions known and your voice heard, particularly on social media. And that has led to this new book, Now What? On a Mission to Fix Broken Britain. You say it's a book for people who don't normally think about politics. So what prompted you to write it?
What's prompted me, really, and to get involved in the last 2 years particularly, is how appalling our politics is. And obviously, in a few days' time, we'll have the US election and the results some days after that. And you can see how things have degenerated over there. And it's similar in Britain. So it was like this is, you know, I grew up in North Wales. I'm fundamentally a northerner, I suppose. But I'm not someone from the southeast. I'm not from the wealthy southeast. And I see just how things haven't changed and have got worse. The inequalities have got greater when there was no need for that to happen. And when we had the pandemic, and over here, obviously, you'll have all heard of Partygate, you know, two prime ministers being fined by the police, and but only nominal fines. The ways of tax avoidance being increased by the Tories for the super rich and so on and so forth. And then for me, it was when the PPE lane information came out, where they were gifting contracts to their associates and buddies.
Can I bring you back to...
That's when I just boiled over. Really.
So before we get to you boiling over, let's bring you back to... your formative years, where your politics, I suppose, was being formed. Because as you said, you know, whilst you may have a life arguably of privilege now, you grew up in profound poverty.
Yes, I did. So I was born in 1960, and my parents had my brother and sister many years before me. And then my mum found that she was Welsh, that my father had been having an affair with a young girl. And so she left him when I was about 2 weeks old and went back home to Prestatyn in North Wales, near Rhyl, that kind of strip of the coast. And, you know, she was brought up on a tenant farm. Lots of my relations were farmers or butchers or whatever on my Welsh side. And my father would have nothing to do with his children, particularly with me. I didn't meet him till I was 42. So he was my mum in 1961, with three young kids, me as a baby, my brother with a severe form of cleft lip and palate. He couldn't speak until he was about eight. And she had to go out and have five part-time jobs. And we grew up in abject poverty. And so those things you never forget. You never forget the kindnesses of people. You never forget the parts of the system that helped you. My education, I was brought up a Catholic and went to a little Catholic school, and all of us were poor, basically, but we were poorer than the others. Most of us were on free school meals, including me and my family. And the headmaster was brilliant. And then I went to secondary school, and the maths teacher was brilliant. And so on it went, you know, where, and somehow or other, at the age of 17,
you made it to Cambridge.
Which was unheard of. Here you are, a girl in a comp from North Wales on free school meals. that had never happened before. And so it was the kindnesses of people and people giving you opportunities, and my life wouldn't have been the same without them. So that's what I remember. And I also think, Double, you get to an age, and I'm nearly 64, where you make different decisions to those that you would make if you were 40 or 50 or even 55, to be perfectly honest. Because for me, going back to the politics, it's like, well, you know, I had my chances, I've made my, you know, taken the opportunities. I was lucky, I managed to buy a property when it was cheap over here.
You bought it with your mum. You bought it with your mum.
Yeah, I went to university when there were no such things as tutorial fees. We had a full, you know, if you were from a background like mine, you had a full maintenance grant. So actually you came out with a degree and having had a reasonably good life for 3 years. And paid for by the state as it should have been. And it was, you know, as I say, you get to this age and you think of things differently. And I think of the lack of opportunity for those who are in their 20s now and the sense of hopelessness that many have when all they want to do is just like buy a little house somewhere. They're not after super rich wealth. And then you see the robbery, basically, by the super rich and tax avoidance and the government contracts being given by the Tories endlessly and the debt that the Tories got us into. And I feel that I should give something back. That is genuinely how I feel. That's why I got involved.
So when we look at the interlude before you decided to get involved in politics, it was remarkable. Like, when I think of the influence of your mum, because she was the one who actually forged your signature to get you into your TV career. Was she a big influence on your life?
Well, it's quite funny, really. Obviously, she was. I employed her from when I was 25. And she lived with me and my kids. And when I was married to Paddy, who's my husband and father of our children, she lived with us. You know, my mum lived with me all of my life. I lived with her and then she lived with me until she died about 7 years ago. So she did have an influence. But there were many things that I've done in my life that she wouldn't approve of, but I've done them anyway. So she didn't dictate my life in any sense whatsoever.
A classic mother-daughter relationship, perhaps. She did. She was, however, responsible for getting you. She forged your signature on an application form led to your career in Countdown. So we have to give her credit for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's amazing. I think back to my student days and all of us devoted to Countdown, perhaps not to our studies sometimes, but it has a huge enduring appeal. You were with it for more than 23 years, yourself and Richard.
Yeah, well, Richard and I were together on it for 23 years, and then he died very suddenly, as you know. And then I carried on for another 3 years after that. So it's 26 in total. But for me, it was really those 23 that were the magical one.
What do you think is the enduring appeal of the show?
I think anyone can play it. And even if you can't beat the contestants, you can say, oh, yeah, I normally get a 5-letter word, or I normally get a 6-letter word. And you find yourself improving as time goes on. You hit a limit naturally. And the same with the numbers, you know, some people, and I think it's the numbers that sorts I'm going to say men from the boys. It's not about that at all, but you have to have the skills in both to be a champion. And so it's all of that, really. And I think Richard and I and the team created this. It was a family, you know, people weren't viewers, Countdowners. We were all in it. We were a Countdown family. And that was a genuine belief. People used to say, you know, journalists and so on would slag us off all the time, which brought off a duck's back to him and I. But if they had a go about our Countdowners, people who watch Countdown, then you got our wrath.
And you protected them like nothing else.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know that you and Richard used to get mobbed at Cheltenham by all of the Irish fans.
By the Irish. I know, we love Cheltenham. Absolutely. And we always promised, it's one of my biggest regrets actually, we always said, right, we've got to do a weekend in Dublin, we said, you know, every year we'll do a theatre show or something. We've got, you know, live countdown or something. And we never did, and it was on our list, you know, of things to do, because he was that little bit older. He'd got to 61, and you think of things differently then, you know.
After that, obviously, your career progressed, your public profile soared. You know, we've seen you in all manner of shows. You've been, obviously, we were just chatting earlier about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
I was still listening to that, yeah. I've been on it twice, you know. I'm one of only 12 who've been on it twice, yeah.
So, but see, your profile is soaring. And then you had your first sort of sacking. That was over an ad for, was it, washing powder?
Yes, I'm very proud. I am the only person to have been sacked by the BBC twice. It's remarkable. Good girl.
And the first one obviously was for the washing powder. Do you think you say in the book that, you know,
they offered me my job back, yeah, because I spoke out, because there were a lot of men doing adverts at the time, and they picked on me. BBC management picked on me. And so Noel Edmonds at this back in the 1990s, I was hosting Tomorrow's World. And he was doing Noel's Maxwell House party, and Wogan, who we loved, was doing a gas advert. And I had no issue with that, but I did have an issue with me being sacked and nobody else being sacked. And so the ratings plummeted because I said as much. And because you have to stick up for yourself. And then, their ratings plummeted. And then 2 months later, they offered me my job back.
I can see this theme developing of you standing up for yourself. You say that there's an unwritten rule book for female celebrities. What is that rule book?
Well, the rule book, well, it has changed in fairness over time, but it's still prevalent in that, you know, male presenters were treated wholly differently to females. It was sort of there under sufferance, really. And yet that's not what audiences thought. I'm not talking about Countdown now, by the way, at all. I'm talking about other things. And then it all kind of started to change properly in around about the year 2000. Some might say it's still the same. I think women have as good an opportunity as men now, to be perfectly honest.
But they still get treated differently in terms of, you know, your appearance, your figure, your fashion, your hair, all of those things.
That's society rather than the bosses. Mm. So, you know, and it's one thing that I always say to young women is you have freedoms now that even my generation, we never, ever, ever could have dreamt of. Please protect them. Please fight for them. They're not a God-given right. They're not even a human right. They are freedoms that have been long fought for, and you have to protect them because there are so many people who take them away from you in an instant.
And you, so and you have really been.
You have to look at America and what's happening there. So,
but let's actually look at that. Look, I mean, threats, legal letters, harassment, stalking. These are not theoretical things. These are things that you've had to deal with in your life. Trolling. How do you handle that?
Well, particularly the last 2 years. So when I started, you know, coming out against the Conservative Party and the government, what they had, the system that they enjoy over here is not only a skewed electoral system, which is a fact. Even Professor Sir John Curtis would say that the natural system here on the first past the post, because you have proportional representation, is skewed to about 50 seats for the Conservatives. It's a complicated reason why, but that is the fact. And then you look at the way we have newspapers, which are not regulated, or rather self-regulated, which are almost without exception biased to the right wing and the Conservatives, and you know, and some broadcasters too, and you start to see just how the elite and the super rich keep the system to themselves. And then you have to, if you're going to go up against them as vehemently as I did, you have to take it on the chin. You know, you have to know that the Daily Mail and the Telegraph and the rest of them will write vitriolic stuff about you, some of which isn't true or is so tainted it isn't true. And that was the thing, you know, that you, as a, you know, an older woman and as a so-called celebrity, you know, I had to go, right, okay, the unwritten rule book for a celebrity is make sure journalists write nice things about you and you seem to be a nice person and blah, 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 blah. You have to rip that rule book up and go, come at me with your worst and I'm still standing. And that's what I did. But you have to take it. You have to have the kind of skin like a rhino in order to take it. And you shouldn't have to.
You shouldn't have to. So did you have some sort of, I don't know, because you've always been fairly straight up. You say it like you see it, slightly edgy. But did you decide, you know what, I'm not going to stay in the lane that society or anyone else has created for me? Did you have some sort of a, I don't know, maybe epiphany is too strong a word, but was there a moment where you decided, right, that's it, I don't care?
Yes, I think I did have, you know, I've had stalkers. Sometimes the police have got involved, which is, and I am not saying this lightly, almost a standard thing that a female celebrity might expect to happen in their lifetime. But I had two during the pandemic, and it really rocked me. This was in like 2021, 2022. And
you say in the book that the last 2 years has nearly been shattering at times. You had to recently step back from, you know, from your LBC show, and people were very concerned. Have you burnt out? Did you reach a burnout?
I burned out, but by hell, I'm coming back, Derval, because it was like, so I live in Bristol, and the LBC, you know, I prep it on a Saturday, travel up to London and yet again on the Sunday and back. They were like 16-hour days and so on. And that meant that I was working 7 days a week because I worked Monday to Friday as well. And it was the build-up of all of that, that, and with the election, and, you know, with Stop the Tories dot vote, our tactical voting website, which had a significant effect on the final result in July in the general election, because millions came to us for the advice about tactical voting. And so, yeah, it just all built up. You know, and I realised that something had to go, but what was it? And then, you know, and I miss the listeners because I love the show, and the show, you know, doubled in audience and all of that kind of thing. But it had to go, I'm afraid, because something had to. So, but I'm still very much part of the LBC family. I'm going to be deputising.
I'm imagining that you're kind of one of these people for whom maybe rest is hard. How are you coming back? Like, how do you get back to yourself?
Well, at first I had to sleep for a week or so, because what happened was I went up to London yet again, and I refused to live in the place. And I had like what I thought was a heart scare. It was like tightening in the chest. And I thought, whoa. So I went to hospital and had all the CT scans and all of that. And there's no underlying heart issue. Great, big gold star there. So then you have to go, but it's a warning. And
your body's telling you something.
It's a warning. You've got to slow down. And I was like a machine, really, for about a year, 18 months, just on the politics.
Because the book now, what is essentially, it's hard to give it. It is sort of part politics, part memoir, part explainer, but it is sort of based on your diaries. And one of the central questions in it, you have a provocation in this book. It's in the title, Now What? And you've got this big plan for change. And what I was fascinated by is that someone like you, who has amassed this huge political capital, who's gone on a huge political adventure, has never been a member of a political party. And I'm just wondering, is there a point at which you have to get into the political fray? Would you ever Would you ever create your own party?
Well, I don't know. but I talk to a lot of the, you know, the people at the top of the parties, other than the Tories, through lawyers.
It's a form of conversation, I suppose.
It's quite funny. And, you know, I know that we have influence because, you know, you can't do anything alone. It's with the support of others, have influenced various things, like the COVID Corruption Commissioner was a direct result of a number of us talking to Rachel Reeves and so on and so forth. However, for me, this now what? Britain is broken. It remains broken. I can't see it getting better anytime soon. And we're staring down the barrel of the 2029 election when the far-right reform charlatans will...
Could potentially come into power.
Well, I don't think they'll come into power, but they will certainly wield more power than they do now. And that is too worrying. So I am working on a big way of people holding any government to account. And it's a form of threat almost, but it's a threat with your vote.
Do you feel you're more powerful outside of the political arena? Would you not? Put your money where your mouth is and actually run?
Because then you're part of the system. Then you're part of the Westminster bubble, which is a huge part of the problem. If you see what I mean. And in the book, I talk about levelling up. You know, everything is London bias. Every single decision, every journalist, it's all London bias. And, you know, as someone who's only ever lived in London for 5 years of her life, I'm not having that anymore. So we have Westminster. We know that the House of Parliament need billions spent on physically on the buildings at the moment. So what's going to happen? And one of the things in the book is an idea for levelling up, which is build some secure buildings outside, have to be more than 80 miles away from London, Plymouth or Liverpool or wherever you work, Derby, wherever. And because our parliament operates in like a school year, they have three terms, and one term every year is spent, they all have to go somewhere else. Because the only way that they'll learn that they're, you know, the so rail services.
Get out of the bubble and go look elsewhere.
They get out of the bubble and they go, oh, no, we can't possibly do that. Yes, you can. What happened in COVID? You all work from home. Yes, it can happen. So it's a lie to say that it can't.
Can I ask you about another sort of manifesto or thread that's running through this book? And this could be a woman in her 40s trying to tap into something. You say that at the book, and I think it's somewhat jocular that you're an old bird with an iPhone, which I don't think is the case. But you did speak earlier about aging and how we look at things sort of differently. But do you think that there is a thing, you know, your postmenopausal? Do you think that we care less, or how did you get through that process? Have you come out kind of the other side of that thinking, actually, is that one of the good things that women of a certain age have to look forward to?
Yes, because I have never felt as free as I do now. The menopause itself, I had a bad time in it, and a lot of women do, but I went through it at a time when people weren't allowed to talk about it. You know, you had to go, oh, I'm having a crazy day. Oh, silly me, you know, all that. Well, I won't swear. But, you know, those days are over. It's like, no, I'm going through the menopause. And you're allowed to say it now. You're allowed to talk about things now. These taboos are being broken down, thank goodness. But I go back to, you know, if I were your age, for instance, I would probably make different decisions. Like when the BBC tried to shut me up on social media last year, and I know it's so bleeding obvious, I'm the only one who's been sacked under the new social media guidelines. I was having a go at the Tories, and there are, you know, former Tory head of Number 10 Communications is on the BBC board of directors. They had the BBC chairman, Richard Clarke, who was then had to resign in disgrace because he'd helped to facilitate a loan.
You know, but obviously, look, there are social guidelines there. I'm sitting on a public broadcaster myself, and we all know the things about having views. But do you think you are freer now, perhaps, because you do have a sense of privilege? Because, look, if you think back to your years of early poverty, you know, there's something comes with privilege when you can afford, perhaps literally and metaphorically, to say what you need to say. Do you feel just kind of freer now? Because, as you say in the book, you have a roof over your head, you have money in the bank, and you have food in the fridge.
Exactly. And I've said that many times, you know, I don't have to worry about money. Mm. And you can take that in two ways. You can go, well, it's all right for you. But actually, because of it, it gives me the freedom to then go forward and talk about this sense of responsibility. If I was dependent on the Radio Wales job that I had with the BBC, for instance, I would probably have made different decisions, but I didn't have to.
And you haven't had to. And now you have gone off. I didn't even get round to your big plan that there is, but there is a big plan. And I suppose after Now What, I will be following very, very closely, Carol Vorderman, as to Next What and what you do. But look, for now, I'm going to have to let you go. Kemi Badenoch, by the way, got the leadership as we were on air. So just to let you know that as we let you go.
And I mean, the Tories won't get back in until she-
Well, no doubt we are going to find out in the next couple of years, because you will be tweeting and doing everything else at them. But for now, Carol Vorderman, thank you for joining us. We'll let you go and we're going to take a quick break.